The next talk is called DeWalk Forever. As you have to know, RC3 is not the first event which happened online in the Chaos Orbit. As the pandemic has led to the cancellation of various Chaos events, a series of online gatherings has been happening during whole 2020. DeWalk is also known as digitally distributed online chaos and is quite fundamentally different from yet another conference moved online by necessity. So in this talk, you will get a behind the scene review highlighting a variety of perspectives. Now we welcome our speakers who speak as representatives for the DeWalk organization. Welcome STB, Benjamin Wand, Brutal, and DJ Spock. And I have a warm virtual applause for you. The stream is yours.
Thank you very much, Sandra. Hello. We are DJ Spock, Benjamin, STB, and Brutal, that's me. And we are going to tell you the story of DeWalk. The story starts when COVID started happening for many of us in early 2020. And then Easter hack didn't happen. And then later on, the GPN didn't happen. And MRMCD didn't happen. So instead, when COVID started to happen, DeWalk started to emerge. That's digitally distributed online chaos. And as I just said, it all started from Easter Hack. Easter Hack 2020 had been well ahead in its planning when it became clear that it wouldn't be happening after all. But there was all this energy that had gone into preparations, and there were talks submitted and accepted, and there was a team ready to go. So go they did. With less than 4 weeks of preparation, and they invented DeWalk. That's not a substitute, but as it turned out, something entirely new. And it included many firsts. It included many self-organized sessions, which after the event officially had ended, seemed to just continue forever, hence DeWalk Forever. The event had proper chaos feeling with your very own DECT. And overall, it had the excitement of something new. And then moving on to May, DeWalk happened again. That was the party edition this time, with a music stream, more self-organized sessions, and a notable first this time, the Quiet Cube that came to DeWalk for the first time. For September 2020, next slide, please. We moved from the home launch to push to talk with another set of many firsts. For the first time, when Easter Hack still was drawing on the CFP, when Hidden Service was still drawing on the CFP for Easter Hack, now we had a DeWalk with its own call for participation. RC3 was starting to be on the horizon, so a number of teams were starting to have test runs. For example, the Kid Space, the Awareness team, we had a Heaven, we had Angels. So as a consequence of that, the organization team was larger than at previous DeWalks. The communication needs changed. We needed active onboarding. And so first, to get into the details here, Benjamin is going to be telling you about the organization, and then we move on to technical solutions with STB. Benjamin, please.
Hello. The management aspects that I'll describe now mostly represent push to talk, because that was the DeWalk with most team and somewhat the most professional event, and actually required something like management. We used pads for almost everything to do with planning, even the slides of this talk run on CodeEMD. Obviously, we had a wiki, but we didn't use that much for the planning, except for some things to do with speaker communication and t-shirt sizes. There was a metapad, and you see example of that on the right side of the slides now. The metapad is the central hub. Everything, like every medium relevant to it, was listed there. Except for the date of the next mumble, which was announced in the Rocket Chat because of my obsession with single source of truth. One might use a wiki, but ultimately pads are more collaborative, and that made the onboarding of new members easier with the simple permission structure, which helped to make people feel invited. Using PAD means lower entrance barrier. Next slide, please. Here, roughly, you see the pads of DevOps push to talk. The metapad lists all the pads and all the pads linked to the metapad. Most of the time, we had mumbles once a week, and in the last 2 weeks, more often. The mumble pads existed early, and more about that later. The next thing we had in the metapad was a persons list. He used an imaginary one. At DevOps push to talk, we had 21 people. When someone joined a DevOps meeting for the first time, we asked them, "What do you want to do?" and wrote it into the persons list, regardless how insignificant. I think it's very important to ask, what do you want to do, and not what are you good at? This comes with an optimistic conception of hacker, where when someone is interested in something, they can learn it. It invites to explore, and exploration makes happy. Also, we never had to babysit anybody's motivation, because they were already doing what made them happy. And maybe that sounds trivial, and as if you're already doing it, but you might ask yourself, when are the occasions where you ask, what should we do? And you could observe the burden that develops compared to things where you started from, what do I want to do? I feel a bit obliged to add that this type of communication built on voluntariness and intrinsic motivation was not always perfect from the beginning. We actually had two teams that are more used to be approached like, we need you, appear. And in those cases, the communication was a bit slow at first. However, I'm convinced that working based on intrinsic motivation is a must-have in volunteer-driven events. And I will try to continue using that way if we continue DevOps. If it grows to more than 30 people, though, I would also make a team list. This was a bit like, we might have already done a team list at Push to Talk. And then the metapad was home to random things and drafts. For instance, an early stage of Call for Angel was lingering around as a draft for a couple of weeks in the metapad. This is once again an invitation to work together. I'd argue that it is better writing on one pad, then merging things later. Nobody likes merging. And then we had the mumble pads. This is the mumble pads existed early, like they existed as soon as the mumble was announced. And here you see an imaginary pad before the meeting starts. We always had the meeting date of mumble, link to metapad, and list of mumble attendees. And before, we would collect topics. Who wanted to discuss something were invited to write it into the agenda. This is good for two things. First of all, it supports single tasking, which makes happy and productive. And the other thing is that when in the beginning of the meeting, there's already agreement what is going to be discussed, the meeting is much smoother. In fact, we didn't need official moderators. In some sense, the pads were the moderators. As soon as the need for a pad came to awareness, the pad was created and linked to a metapad. This was also true for feedback pads. And doing this, in my opinion, is important to keep everybody's mental load at a bearable level by promoting single tasking, especially at stressful times. The idea for the Q&A pad came up at Hidden Service, where we try to get a low-tech way of audience participation. The Signaler Angel cared for the visual order in the pad, and the Herald read the questions directly from the pad. And in a very rare case of bad behavior on the pad, the Signaler Angel would change the writing permission on the pad to team only and add questions from Matrix and Twitter. And this was somehow, there was chaos organizing itself magically on the Q&A pads. People wrote answers themselves, and people wrote down the answers from the speaker. So this was something that we were surprised of. Yes, and now to STB for the technical details.
You are muted, STB. You have to unmute.
Well, somebody muted me, but apparently I have to unmute myself. So now you should be able to hear me and see me. So before I get into the technical details, let me just add one thing that was a rather major point for me that which made it absolutely enjoyable to be part of the organizational team. And that was that we very quickly gathered people who thought, oh, maybe I can contribute something. And they appeared for the first time in one of the mumbles and said, would you mind if I did this or that? And we said, by all means, go ahead. That's a fantastic idea. Just do it. And that was absolutely fantastic. It created a very nice atmosphere working together. And I think many of the things that worked really well got to us not by some central person saying, hey, let's do this. Somebody has to do this. We need to find somebody who can do this or that for us. But really people popping up and saying, is anybody doing X yet? And the answer usually was, no, nobody is doing that yet, but it's a fantastic idea. Do you want to do it? And they did. So that was really, that made it super cool to be part of them. All right. Into the technical details. I'm going to talk a little bit about the live video production and how we did that, how the workshops and self-organized sessions work on a technical level, a little bit how we managed some communication and community interaction, and finally, some thoughts about free software and open source. Okay, so the live video production. The VOC somehow was preparing OBS Studio as a remote controlled video switching and direction thing, and they were playing around with that. And when Easterhag had to be canceled, somebody from the VOC said, do you want to do a virtual event? And some of us said, yeah, why not? Like, we have all this content, and if you know how to do like a remote thing, we'll be happy to work on that. And that's how that got started. And at that time, OBS was the only thing we really had available. So we had a central OBS that put together the speakers and the heralds and everybody else who would appear on camera. And the speakers and heralds were using OBS on their own machines to produce their image and mix in the slides and all that. For some things, we used Jitsi or BBB, especially if we have multiple speakers. And that simply worked through kind of filming the browser window, like we're doing right now the second. When people are using OBS to produce their own video signal, there's a lot of latency involved. So typically, the minimum latency that you can achieve with OBS is about 5 seconds. And of course, if you have an interaction between a herald or two speakers, 5 seconds is way too long. That creates very awkward pauses. Or if the latency is different between the different speakers, then people start talking over each other, and that doesn't work at all. So we thought, okay, we have a tool that enables low latency audio. interaction, and that is Mumble. So all of the participants were together in a Mumble and were talking through Mumble with each other. And then the video and the audio for the stream was picked up by OBS, and we synchronized the OBSs so they would all have the same amount of latency, roughly at least, by basically adjusting the streaming parameters that the OBS is using. And that worked relatively well, not perfect, but it definitely worked. Of course, we had the power of the VOC behind this event or these events. So the VOC was providing CDN and the transcoding for that. And so that worked really well. We also wanted to have live translation in there. And that is something that this year we couldn't do in the DVOX. That's simply... until last year, I thought that computer audio was a solved problem. And I learned this year it's not. It's horrible. Basically, irrespective of which operating system you use, and it's super hard to pick up and mix together audio sources in just the right way to embed them into a final video streams with multiple audio tracks. That's a really hard problem that we don't have a good solution for, but except for with professional equipment, but not on basically home computers with open source software. But work is ongoing on that. But we could make the interpreters heard through Mumble directly. So we communicated simply the Mumble server that the interpreters were speaking into while listening to the live stream, and people could pick up the interpreted audio from there. The fact that we couldn't get the translated audio directly into the stream is also the reason most of the talks from the DVOX are not online yet on MediaCCCDE, because somebody still needs to sit down and do the final audio mixing. And I'm hoping to help do that in the next couple of weeks. And yet another use of PADS and CodeEMD. CodeEMD includes a feature where you can write Markdown slides. And through Reveal.js, a JavaScript library, you can produce slides. The slides you're looking at right now are produced exactly this way. And you can enable autoplay. And so that was our InfoBeamer. So again, we just filmed a browser window in which this pad was running. And that was how we got the typical InfoBeamer style slides onto the stream. And again, questions and feedbacks via the pads, but Benjamin already mentioned that. One thing that is more organizational than necessarily technical is you need to spend a lot of time preparing the speakers. Of course, at the end of this year, this has become much easier, but at the beginning of the year, virtually nobody had any idea how to produce good video and audio from home. Very few people had done that before. Maybe some gamers did because they're on Twitch all the time. I have no idea. But most people had no idea how bad they really sounded or looked on video because of the lighting. Not necessarily even because of the technological limitations of their systems, but really because the lighting was bad and they were trying to use the microphone that was built into their laptop. So getting headsets to everybody or similar setups was really important. And of course, we had to rehearse all this. Like, how does this work? Like, who is going to say what when? When is the speaker going to start speaking? And when does the herald come in and all that? So depending on the like computer savviness of the speakers, that could take anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours. And we had a couple of complicated setups where we even spent more than 2 hours in multiple sessions to get people prepared. And for the most part, that worked well. But we had, especially at Push to Talk, we had one thing as our opening on a Friday night where multiple people from all around the world were trying to join a big blue button. And we had no time to rehearse that before. So the technical quality, unfortunately, was not so great, which is unfortunate because it was a very interesting topic. And maybe we find time to do something like that again with better quality. If you want to do something like this yourself, you don't need too many people, but the recommendation would be you need somebody doing the actual live video editing, a video director. You need somebody who is the sole person to contact, the single point of contact. So if there's a question, where's the speaker, or the speaker wants to know which Jitsi to join, or what other URL to open, you need this one person that can answer all these questions, maybe not answer them themselves, but knows who to talk to get good answers. It's really useful to have a herald who can moderate things and is available if something goes wrong technically, so you don't have to broadcast like a thing like we're going to be back right real soon now or something. So somebody who can come on screen and quickly explain what's happening right now. And of course, when you're using pads to directly let the audience participate in asking questions, at least for some topics, it's absolutely necessary to have somebody who is monitoring these pads and like make sure no vandalism happens or something worse. So that's really useful to have that. And some of our heralds really enjoyed having signal angels who sorted and prepared the questions for them. So sorted them by topic or indicated which questions were asked multiple times or something like that, and helped structure the pad basically. So the heralds can simply pick out the questions one by one without having to read through a long conversation on IRC themselves, for example. Okay, on to workshops and the self-organized sessions. As Benjamin mentioned, we basically provided a wiki page where everybody could add their session, and people did. So we had to do very little to entice people to start doing that, and they even started improving the wiki page themselves and organize it, because very quickly we had a lot of entries in these tables. And they, of course, we could not provide the infrastructure to host a session ourselves, but already at the time we had a lot of open instances of Jitsi, BigBlueButton, run by reputable organizations or individuals. So we simply provided a list of free servers that people could use, and people picked them and then simply put the link into the wiki page for their event. So they started using that quite extensively. And we did not have to do much except make sure that the wiki page was not badly formatted or something like that. So a couple of times we had to fix a couple of obvious mistakes, but we didn't need to edit this. And although this page was open to edit to anyone, we had no vandalism, knock on wood. And so as Benjamin said, to our big surprise, the sessions didn't end when the first event ended. And we now and then there's more sessions that are announced that way. So apart from the self-organized sessions, we also provided basically the wiki as a central point for people to find information and find community resources, like which pads to use for the questions, for the talks, or where to chat in Matrix or IRC or Discord or Mastodon or Twitter, like which accounts to follow. Again, that was a community effort. We did not run our own Matrix server or create anything there, especially not Discord, but people did. And they said, hey, I set this up. Can you link to it? And we said, gladly, fantastic. And there were people who were monitoring those channels and communicating back and forth and answering questions. So again, the community stepped up and did things, and it became a really great event without much central coordination. So that was, again, a very nice thing to happen. And finally, except for the injection of the translated audio, into the stream for the translators, everything worked decently well. So there's a couple of tools that, although they're open source, are really top notch. Of course, there's small problems everywhere, but you can do this without any proprietary tools. So in this year, we have heard from people, oh no, you have to use Zoom, everything else sucks. And that's simply not true. Big Blue Button and Jitsi as video conferencing systems work. They work very decently. Could they work better? Of course. Are they lacking features? Of course. But having had to work with some commercial alternatives in my day-to-day job, I can tell you the commercial tools are not necessarily any better. They just suck in different ways. So I'm very happy to be able to do this with free software and open source. And there's no reason to think that you couldn't do it. And one more thing. It was very interesting which people came together. So we started using Big Blue Button, and the Big Blue Button people, the developers, became aware of it and contacted us and said, hey, we're doing this kind of hackathon, and invited a bunch of people to help improve the feature set of Big Blue Button. And so a couple of features that have been introduced in the past 6 months are kind of the result, not the direct result, but the kind of interaction with the wider community and some of the things we've been doing. And I think that's wraps it up, and I'll hand it over to DJ Spock, who will talk about the music program in two of the three events.
Yes, hi. So in the first of the three events we had, there was music program, but I think it was only one or two concerts. And when it came to Gulasch Programmiernacht, it was canceled. When I heard about it, then I thought, there must be another event instead of that. And then I tried to organize another DVOG. It was way too late for a content like talks or workshop or something like this. So I thought I will make musical content only. So we had no talks, we had no workshops, we had only music and audio art. But during the preparation for this event, something really great happened, and there were just things happening. So people were creating self-organized sessions, were creating there some kind of talks, some kind of workshops. So that was not only music on this event, we have also a lot of other things going on. We streamed nonstop from Wednesday afternoon till Sunday evening, so we had no breaks. It was a nonstop live stream. Like 90% of the content was really live. We have some stuff that was pre-recorded, but most of the things were live. And we have done it in cooperation with Radio Darmstadt and C-Radar. C-Radar is a show, it's a CCC radio show, which I can really recommend. It's from Chaos Darmstadt. And C-Radar and Radio Darmstadt supported us with their infrastructure, but I will talk about the technical features later. And we also have some supporters for the content from Sphere Radio. Sphere Radio is from Leipzig. This is an online radio. Also, All FM is also an online radio. It's from Hamburg, and they contributed also content to our music and audio art stream. And then let's talk about the technology. How was it broadcasted? We broadcasted the audio via Icecast, so that was no video, it was only audio, and we used Icecast for the internet broadcasting. The Radio Darmstadt has, of course, their own infrastructure for broadcasting the stuff over FM and also DAB+. So I'm not sure if there already have been a CCC event that was almost completely broadcasted via a... sorry? I have heard something, I guess. That was also broadcasted via FM and via DAB+. What technology we used for the organization, for the preparation? So C-File was is a really nice tool that we really liked for exchanging data. for exchanging files. This is also a non-centralized and open source tool. That's why we use it. We didn't use any WeTransfer or Google Drive or stuff like this. And if it comes to music, we have been using Mix, a Traktor, and But. But it doesn't mean what you think. It's just a shortcut for broadcast using this tool. And this is a tool that can stream stuff to an Icecast server. And Mix and Traktor are actually DJ software. Mix, by the way, is also an open source free software for mixing, and I also can really recommend it. At the beginnings, 2 or 3 years ago, it was really not a good software. You could actually not be DJing with that, but right now it's really, really great, and it can directly stream to an Icecast server. And Traktor, which actually is a commercial software, and it's like the state of the art software when it comes to digital mixing, to digital DJing. I think it's really nice that the only possibility that they have in their program to stream to an audio server is to stream to an open source Icecast. So that's why I'm mentioning this. And I also would like to mention that it was a really great thing that I started to doing this musical stuff, and so much other things happened also without any interaction from me, and almost all of the people also who are right now here in this talk were supporting this event. It was really nice, and we also had some music and the push to talk event by actually using the same technology. And I could talk hours about this, but I think that was enough overview.
Thank you very much, DJ Spock, Benjamin, STB, for this rundown of the organizational technical details and the music stream. So let's try to pull this all together and look at how it worked out. First, content. I previously mentioned that the hidden service could rely on recycled submissions from Easterhack, but by the time it came to push to talk, we were ready to experiment some more to use the advantages of this remote feature. And we had our own CFP asking specifically for remote interactive contents. And even though perhaps it didn't turn out perfect technologically, it did allow us to have something like a multi-site transcontinental live transmission broadcast on live stream. That's one of the examples. Another example was that we had an art workshop that directly was engaging the remote audience and interacting via various social media in real time. Also, we've heard this multiple times, but it probably cannot be stressed enough that DVOC is really an event where everyone is an active contributor. People are not just an audience. It's a real community event, small events, but definitely very much community driven. So in that sense, DVOC is not for tourists, which simply means that it attracts a certain type of crowd that is really eager to contribute themselves. So an amazing level of self-organization has emerged. We've heard this before. Really a lot of self-organized sessions happened and kept happening, and various degrees of self-organization of the participants with contributed matrix channels, Qt APEDs, and so on. We've heard all this. And it's also a format that turned out to be particularly suitable for communities that are distributed to start with. One of the examples is the Autismus Nerd Talk, with people distributed all over, and another traditionally distributed network are the Hexen. Please do ask us more about these examples in the Q&A. We have data. Also, anecdotal evidence here, I do want to mention this. We felt that this kind of event attracted a quite diverse and international crowd, and that was also a very welcome side effect. So trying to summarize all this, let me say that DVOCs are community events that can bring together people, that can bring together communities, that can spawn new and improbable friendships. And I have to say that personally, this is really something that has kept me afloat through this year. DevOps can be a lot of fun to organize and attend. So at this point in time, a very, very big thank you to all of you who made this happen. But also, DevOps are not a substitute. It's just not the same as real life events, and we all know that. And it means that when you're preparing a DevOps to happen, you have to invest some energy to manage expectations. People shouldn't be expecting exactly the same experience that they would have in physical events. Also, let's not kid ourselves here. COVID is not done with us, so we are not done with DevOps. And that is the, well, more hidden and darker meaning also of DevOps Forever. DevOps is here to stay for a while. So let's look at the details of how that can happen. What can we offer? What can you offer for the future of DevOps? First of all, if you're new to this, we invite you to catch up on previous DevOps. You will find the individual events on the previously mentioned wiki pages that are listed here. And as always with Chaos events, you'll find the recorded talks of past events either in the temporary redive or properly published in the archive on media.ccc.de with the individual links to the talks of the events given below. Secondly, you can join the community if you haven't already done so. On the one hand, by looking if there are still any self-organized sessions going on that you would like to become part of. You can join the community on IRC, on Matrix, or connect on social media via Mastodon or Twitter. And then finally, thirdly, if you want to contribute yourself, if you want to organize a future DevOps or adopt DevOps elements into your own event, we have compiled resources on how to DevOps, again, in a dedicated wiki page that you see listed here. And you're very welcome to get in touch with us, with the DevOps team at the email address listed here. So at this point, before we move on to the Q&A and invite you to an interactive workshop right after this, STB is going to give us a sneak preview for 2021.
That sounds like we have prepared something already. No, we haven't really prepared anything yet, but as we all were preparing for this current event, the RC3, we all had hopes that the whole coronavirus situation would somehow magically be less severe than it turned out to be this winter. And at this point, it's pretty clear that at least in Germany, we won't have any live in-person events at least until the summer. I speak for the people who are here right now, but I think a couple more as well. We really think that over Easter, we don't want to do something again, whatever the name might be. And I think we'll just continue the tradition of having a DevOps at Easter, or that will be the beginning of the tradition, so to speak. So if you don't know what you want to do over Easter, because you're stuck at home because of restrictions, think about whether you want to join DevOps, help organize it, contribute some interesting content, organize a cool workshop, or whatever strikes your fancy, really, because it continues to be also an experimental format. We're not really restricted in many ways, and we can do pretty much whatever you want. So if you have a cool idea that you think might be worth trying, please get in touch, join us, and then we'll see what we can do in a couple months' time.
So
So,
and I don't know. I can. So the final thing really is the Q&A. We've finished our time slot, so there's unfortunately no time for the Q&A right now here on the stream. But if you go to the link that is on the slide right now, so in RC World, if you log on to the rc3.world and look, search, use the search function to search for DVOC, there's a DVOC Forever workshop, which is a big blue button. And we'll be joining that big blue button right after this talk in a minute or two. And then we look forward to answering your questions, hear your suggestions, or whatever you might want to say to us, or come and join us right away.
So thank you very much to the really interesting insight of DVOC. And I think we should all go now to the workshop and ask the questions, or just, you know, help to keep this going on. And I think it can be a really interesting alternative for staying alone at home next year.
Absolutely.